It's Wednesday, the 24th of November, 2021. Glad to have you along for today's edition of The World and Everything in It. Good morning. I'm Paul Butler.
And I'm Nick Eicher. Hey, quick word as we head into the Thanksgiving holiday. Quick word on our November new giving drive. By now, I expect you have heard about the dollar-for-dollar match up to $40,000 for all new gifts this month. We're not quite there yet, a little better than halfway toward the goal. So some longtime friends of ours from Pennsylvania got in touch and said that they wanted to incentivize it further. So here is their offer. If you have never given before and you can help us reach that $40,000 goal by making a first-time gift this month, our friends will chip in an additional $10,000. So that will really help to multiply your giving if you'd become a first-time donor with us this month.
That's great. Please consider heading over to wng.org/donate to make your gift today. That's wng.org/donate. Well, first up today, China. President Biden and Chinese leader Xi Jinping met last week for a virtual summit. The meeting didn't result in any new agreements or policy shifts, but the White House says it was never intended to. Instead, President Biden said he hoped to establish, quote, guardrails against conflict between the two countries.
There is no shortage of disagreements between the rival superpowers. Beijing has in no way disguised the fact it intends to outcompete and overtake America in the years ahead. China already has the world's second largest economy behind the United States, and it's ramping up its military capabilities at a dizzying pace. So, how is the United States countering the threat?
Well, here to help us answer that question is Zach Cooper. He's served as an advisor to the Defense Department. He's now a lecturer at Princeton University, as well as a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Good morning, Zach, and thanks for joining us.
Wonderful to be here with you.
Well, let's start with last week's virtual summit between President Biden and Xi Jinping. What do you think the meeting accomplished?
I think the best thing the summit accomplished is a new tone in the relationship. So if you go back to the past several months, there had been a series of pretty tense meetings between American and Chinese leaders that started in Anchorage, Alaska, and then went on to Tianjin in China. And in each of those meetings, both sides had made very pointed comments in the meetings, after the meetings, and really were critiquing the other side quite strenuously. The tone now is somewhat better in the relationship. Xi and Biden both spoke somewhat positively, at least of each other. And my understanding is that there were still a fair number of tensions in the closed door session, but at least this wasn't fireworks in front of the press. So that's probably the most positive thing that one can say about the summit that just happened.
So why do you think tone is important?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure it is that important, in fact. The hope from the White House is that an improved tone will lead the Chinese officials to be able to be somewhat more cooperative. So there's a feeling that Xi Jinping has been very confrontational in his discussions about the United States over the last few years, and that that may have made other officials in China, more junior officials, feel that they also had to be somewhat confrontational. And so the hope is that if the tone is better now, that perhaps the results will be better as well. But I'll tell you, my expectation is that this meeting will not have solved any of the core structural problems in the relationship. And therefore, although the change in tone is a positive, it doesn't signify any fundamental alteration in the direction of the relationship, which I think is still trending in a very bad direction.
There's a lot of talk about competing with China. Let's take a look first at doing so economically. There's a lot of talk in Washington about selective decoupling from China. I'll ask you about recoupling in just a minute, but let's start with this term, selective decoupling. What is it, and why do many in America feel that it's the right prescription?
Well, the core idea is that the United States has been very closely coupled economically with China for decades. And we have gotten relatively cheap goods from China. In exchange, we have sent money, which has helped to feed the Chinese economy. And in many ways, China has been a production hub And the U.S. has been able to focus more on other areas, whether that's farming or high technology, where China doesn't have an advantage. But over the last couple of decades, it's clear that this has altered some aspects of the U.S. economy in some ways that are fairly negative. And so some people have argued that the U.S. should decouple to some degree from the Chinese economy. In other words, that the U.S. should be more self-reliant in certain areas, things like microchips or personal protective equipment or pharmaceutical ingredients, and that doing so would better protect Americans, especially if those supply chains for those kinds of critical goods are strained, as they are right now. And so the idea was, well, maybe we should decouple a bit from China, and that would give the U.S. more security at home. And in fact, maybe it would bring a bit of business back to the United States, even if it increased prices somewhat. And so the idea isn't to completely decouple the two economies. I think that's unrealistic and it would be unwise. But the idea is instead to just decouple selectively in certain areas where we think we need to have a bit more independence from Beijing.
Now, that sounds reasonable to me, but you seem to hedge a bit on that argument.
Well, I actually think that selective decoupling is probably not a bad idea, as long as it's done pretty carefully. But the one thing that it does, which is potentially quite risky, is that if we decouple in too many areas too quickly, we could find that, in fact, Beijing is not very dependent on the United States anymore. And although we don't talk about this a lot, it's actually pretty good for the United States for China to be dependent on us in certain areas. And the reason is because it gives us leverage. And oh, by the way, the Chinese know this. They have a plan called the dual circulation policy. And part of the idea is to keep selling goods to the world while China tries to stimulate more domestic growth. And what that means is that China wants to have leverage over some other countries by being a main exporter to them. And so it's still helpful for the United States to have China be dependent on the United States in certain areas, even as we're decoupling. And so really my argument would be we should be thinking carefully about how to recouple in certain strategic areas that give us leverage over China, not that we would use today, but that we could use tomorrow if we need to.
Now, you mentioned how this recent meeting marks a shift in tone for the U.S. in regards to China. But before that, had there been much of a difference between the actual policies of the Biden administration and the Trump administration?
A lot of them have been quite similar, and this surprised a lot of people. I think many observers expected the Biden team would take a much more cooperative approach from day one. And in fact, in some areas, the Biden team was perhaps even tougher than the Trump team. And that really did come as a surprise to many observers in Washington. But I'll tell you, in talks with leaders and officials in Beijing, I think Chinese officials were even more surprised. They really thought there was going to be a positive change in the relationship under Biden. However, over the last 2 or 3 months, I do think we've seen a improvement in the bilateral relationship. And some of this is because John Kerry has been pushing for climate change cooperation, and I think there are others in the administration pushing for advances on trade issues, and they have been able to affect some of the dynamics within the administration on China policy and try and turn it in a more cooperative direction. And I don't want to suggest that I think that's necessarily a good thing. I think it's a risk for the United States to give up some leverage on other issues to try and force China to come to the table on climate change. But I do think that's the dynamic we're seeing now, is China's leveraging climate change as a way to limit pressure from the United States in other areas.
Now, you mentioned that Washington should start working more closely with its allies and together make China more dependent on certain foreign products. How do you think that'll work? And what kind of foreign products are you talking about?
I'll give you one good example, which is a lot of Chinese cell phones used to use the Android operating system that Google makes. And that actually gave the United States a tremendous amount of leverage not only over those cell phone makers, but also over certain apps that were on those phones and on down the line. And that kind of leverage is quite lasting, right? If overnight the United States could legally force Google to stop updating the operating systems from a large portion of phones in China, that's a pretty substantial coercive mechanism. And we're not going to want to use it frequently, but it's the kind of thing that you could imagine might change some Chinese behavior. And there's been a push, for example, to wall off that kind of area. So to say, no, the United States shouldn't allow phones in China to operate using the Android operating system or other similar technology that's US-based. And I think part of what I'm arguing here is I think actually having that leverage over the long term is something that would be more useful to the United States than trying to slow down makers of phones in China and force them to build their own Android systems over the next few years. So that's the kind of example of an area where perhaps some degree of recoupling wouldn't be a bad thing.
Zach Cooper is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Zach, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.